Recovery Elevator, episode 480.
Starting to learn that there was a community of people out here who didn't have to drink. And knowing that I wasn't alone was such a big part of that.
Welcome to the Recovery Elevator Podcast. My name is Paul Churchill, and I'm so excited to be here with you. On today's episode, we have Emily. She's 31 years old from Raleigh, North Carolina, and took her last drink on March 17th, 2019. Great job, Emily. Listeners, today is going to be a good day. Today has already been a good day. But caveat with that previous line, that could easily be considered a healthy dose of toxic positivity. I've written and recorded episodes on shit days, but as long as I stay away from a drink, any day has the potential to be a full send day, as the kids would say. And one motto I have is to keep showing up to this microphone, even on the shit days, on the good days, on the rainy days, and the sunny days. But I do want to mention this, listeners, don't fight the suck. Embrace it all, because it's all part of this human life. And now a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Listeners, there's a reason why we've been working with BetterHelp for over 4 years now. I believe in the product. I believe in the platform. I believe in therapy. I've personally used BetterHelp and I have found their services valuable. If you're struggling with quitting drinking, I know they can help. I personally found traction in my sobriety journey when I started talking to other human beings about my desire to be alcohol-free. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/elevator today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/elevator. Okay, let's get started. I've been wanting to do this episode for a long time now, so here we go. Today, I'm going to share with you my favorite AF legends with you guys. And if you're new to this space, AF means alcohol free. And as the cool kids would say, AFAF. Now, this list of AF legends, of course, is the short list. I've had so much help on my alcohol-free journey from those who have walked before me that this episode could be and should be several hours long, but for time purposes, this is the condensed list. Let's do it. On the Gold Coast of Australia, about 1 hour south of Brisbane, is an alcohol-free legend named Barry. I met Barry at an AA meeting in 2019, and I'll never forget him. For starters, he uses the word cowabunga every other sentence, almost identical to the way the Ninja Turtle Michelangelo says it. It's actually a really fun word to say, cowabunga. So I went to this AA meeting and I found myself talking to Barry in the parking lot afterwards. He then asked me if I wanted to go feed the seagulls and I said, sure. I hopped on his Harley, we picked up some bread and went to the ocean. Barry taught me it's the little things in life that creates the most beautiful textures in life. And as the philosopher Nietzsche said, in a rare moment of deep stillness, for happiness, how little suffices. Little did I know, I was in the midst of a great modern AF philosopher named Barry Cowabunga. My next AF legend is Bill Wilson. In 1935, Bill W., a former New York stockbroker, found that sharing his story to other alcoholics or those in need helped himself stay sober. Now, today this might seem the norm or understood, but back then this was revolutionary. So Bill would go to hospitals and ask if he could speak to the most helpless cases of alcoholics, and the doctors were like, yeah, sure, be my guest. And one of those bedside visits was with a doctor named Dr. Bob, who was a patient. Now, Dr. Bob is also an AF legend because he ended up being one of the co-founders of AA as well. This is after Bill W. shared his story to Dr. Bob while Dr. Bob was in bed struggling with alcoholism. Now, I understand that AA isn't everyone's cup of spiced latte, but it's without a doubt the lodestar program that got this whole movement underway. And about 7 or 8 years ago, there was a documentary on Bill W. I think it's called Bill W. that shows his struggles, challenges of creating Alcoholics Anonymous. That guy is a true AF legend. My next AF legend, or legends, plural, would be the 480 rock stars who have shared their story on this podcast. You may have noticed, and we are strategic with this, that most of our interviewees are in their first 6 months of sobriety and are coming on this podcast with one goal in mind, and that's to help the person who is still struggling because they've been there themselves. Our interviewees have realized that for them to be successful, they have to help others, which is a true gangster realization. So thank you to all of our interviewees on the podcast. You all are the true heroes in this project. My next alcohol-free legend is Alabama head coach Nick Saban. Now, Saban didn't necessarily struggle with alcohol, but in a recent interview, he said he decided to remove alcohol from his life before having kids. Since then, he went on to win 7 national championships, which is the most of all time. So let me summarize that. Nick Saban quit drinking, then he went on to become the greatest college football coach of all time. My next alcohol-free legend is Brad Pitt. I'm a huge fan of his work, his art, and his movies. I think A River Runs Through It being at the top of that list. One of my favorite quotes from that movie is that although life is a work of art, the moment cannot last. So poetic, so pure, and so true, this too shall pass. On Brad's experience of attending AA, he said, "It was actually really freeing just to expose the ugly sides of yourself. There's so much great value in that." The next AF legend I want to mention is my sponsor that I had from 2014 to 2016. This guy met with me in person once a week for around 60 to 70 weeks to walk me through the steps. He held so much space for me as I recovered, as I built the foundation for my new life. Now, I wrote my fourth step, which is you write people, places, and things, how they have harmed you, and then you write your part. It took me 2 1-hour sessions to read my fifth step while he just sat there and listened and drank his coffee. I am forever grateful for his time and insight. Thank you so much. My next AF legend is my dog, Ben. This dog will 100% be a human in his next life because he saved my life. He was my tether to the planet in 2013 and 2014 when things got, well, very grim. He taught me unconditional love, despite me forgetting to feed him while I was blacked out. And as I write this, I'm watching and listening to this divine creature saw logs as he naps on his pillow. Thank you, Ben. And my clear number one alcohol-free legend is the universe. Some call it a higher power, some call it God, some call it a group of drunks. You can call it whatever you want. But my AF legend is the universe, which is the playground or the dance where all this is taking place. So up until this moment, the universe has provided me with everything I've needed for wholeness, happiness, and well-being. True, the universe can and will give you a roundhouse to the kidney at any time, but it's always done so with the goal of promoting growth or to illuminate a better path. Now, some notables I want to mention that made a big splash in this space are Robin Williams and Matthew Perry. Their openness and candidness provided insight to so many, and they will be forever missed. They realized that comedy and lightheartedness, and perhaps some self-deprecation thrown in there as well, is key to showing that life should not be taken so seriously. We have an internal rule with this. This is Rule 22 at Recovery Elevator, that at no moment on this journey should we take ourselves too seriously. Now, you might be saying to yourself, wow, maybe one day I'll be an AF legend. Sure, sobriety time helps, but let me tell you, it's not a requirement. I've heard newcomers in our cafe area chats, with maybe 1 or 2 days away from their last drink, drop such raw truth bombs that I'm almost in awe in the insight that they possess. And keep in mind, we are all on the same day, and we are just walking each other home, as my man Patrick Foley and Ram Dass say. Before we get to exact nature and our interviewee today, I want you to think and pause for a moment. Who are your AF legends? Who are your role models on this journey? And if possible, take a time to be thankful for them. Sit in silence for a minute and send them some love and energy and say thank you. I think a point of an addiction, yes, if we ride it into the abyss and out into wholeness, is to put us into a base of gratitude, or a common view, or everything goes through the lens of gratitude as we view the universe, the people, and the places that we exchange with. So I am forever thankful for these AF legends. And again, this is the short list. I could have just read names for hours. So again, this is the short list. Thank you so much to all for your help. And now let's hear from Exact Nature.
Exact Nature's safe and healthy CBD-based products are formulated to help you with the challenges of quitting drinking, such as addictive cravings, depression, anxiety, and lack of sleep. If you're interested in learning more, head on over to exactnature.com and use the promo code RE20 to receive a 20% discount on your order. That is RE20 at exactnature.com.
Recovery Elevator, please help me welcome Emily to the show. Emily, how the heck are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good. It's good to see you. I was excited to have you reach out. Emily is like a longtime alumni of Cafe RE, and her and I have been in like a few like group chats and Marco Polo chats together. We've been around the community together for a long time, so it was cool to hear from you again, and I'm super excited for this time that we have together. Can you let listeners know how long you've been sober?
Yeah, so I actually just hit 5 years on March 17th, so St. Patrick's Day. My sober date was March 17th, 2019.
That is so freaking awesome. Listeners, we're recording this the day after St. Patrick's Day, so we got a fresh five-year-old in the hot seat. I'm so pumped for you. That's just absolutely amazing. How did it feel, and did you do anything to celebrate?
Yeah, it feels pretty incredible. Like, when I first started this journey, and I'm sure we'll get into it, about, like, 1 year was a long time. And then the second year came, and then the third, and then the fourth, and now it's 5 years. And it just, now looking back, it just flew by. But as far as celebrating, I actually worked yesterday. So no crazy celebrations, but because I'm a kid at heart, I ordered myself some slime, and that was my present to myself.
Yes. Treat yourself. That's so cool, man. I love it. And I agree with you. There's, I don't know, sobriety, I suppose, is probably the same as life. It's weird. There's moments where it's like, I've been doing this forever. This is just old hat. This is just what I do now. This is who I am. And then there's other moments where it's like, I feel like yesterday I was like navigating day 63, and how in the hell do I have like 5 years now? How is that possible?
It's wild to think about. I mean, I didn't ever think that this day would come. I mean, looking back on my journey, like being sober and not drinking, that was wild to think about. Like, what? 5 years now? Crazy.
Very cool. And I think this is, I guess I didn't even think about this as we were setting this up, but I think this is a cool way to celebrate 5 years, to, you know, to give back. And that's, I hope that you can see that. That's exactly what you're doing today, is giving back to the recovery community at large. Super proud of you. Nice work, sister.
Thanks. Yeah. I felt like it was probably overdue at this point that we sat down and had this talk.
Perfect. Before we get into your story, Emily, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Where you're from, what you do for a living, age, any pets you want to tell us about, and most importantly, what do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, so my name's Emily. I'm 31 years old. I live in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. I work in water treatment, so I have a big responsibility of making sure you know, community water is safe and keeping people hydrated, you know. As far as like what I like to do for fun, I'm really into music. So going to like music festivals and concerts and things like that have always been something I've really enjoyed. And now, you know, doing it without drinking was a whole new world, but it's still a ton of fun. And I feel like I'm present now. And then pets, I have a dog named Yogi Bear, and he's seven, wild, but he is a husky. I thought he was a husky corgi, but apparently he's just husky, and he's just short.
That's okay, Yogi. I remember this was like the early days of us being in the community. We were at, I don't remember if it was a special meet. Maybe it was just like a regular cafe RE meeting, and looking on camera, and I'm like, all right, listen, I don't want to be judgmental, but is that girl holding a freaking stuffed animal, like a giant life-size stuffed animal? And it was like her big fluffy dog.
Yeah, he's a big baby.
I love it. And music, I remember also, again, like, this is going to be a trip down memory lane for us, I'm sure, a little bit. At least for me, music was kind of a cool thing for you too in sobriety, to discover sort of the sober scene side of it, right?
Absolutely. So I, as far as like my musical tastes go, I'm all over the spectrum of music. Like, you know, growing up, I was very into like the alternative rock. I guess some people refer to that as like the emo phase. I always loved, you know, classic rock. Some country I was into, like the late 90s. And then mostly later, I got into like the electronic music scene. And I think going into that, like there is a big like community that is, you know, likes to participate in party favors. And, you know, there is some drinking a lot of times. So when I first experienced that sober, like I was like, am I going to be able to do this?
Yeah. I think that's a fear that a lot of people have, but it's cool that I've heard a lot of different people that have discovered these like sober corners of these worlds. And whether it's, you know, I don't know the percentages of electronic music or rock or of any genre, you know, the percentage that is participating in alcohol or drug use, but it's cool that people have found these sober corners that are like little safe spaces where it's like, hey, we love this music and we want to do it, you know, clear-minded.
Yeah, it's been really exciting. I mean, I happened to find like a group of people that when I first went back to music festivals and I was planning on not drinking, I think I had like 6 months of not drinking. And I was like, oof, can I do this? And I found people through, it might've been Facebook, that, you know, didn't drink and didn't do drugs. And some of them were in recovery. Some of them had just never participated. And, you know, I met up with these people and I had an amazing time. And some of them are really good friends that I see at these events when I go. And it's just really awesome to have people that also aren't participating in, you know, drugs or alcohol, and having those connections and not feeling like there's a pressure to do those things.
I love it. I love it. All right. It's just a little side thing that popped into my head. So that's where we went for a minute. But we want to hear more of your story. Let's learn about your journey with alcohol. Maybe some early exposure or set the scene from a young age, whatever you think is appropriate. And then let's walk forward.
Yeah, so I'll start early. I was an adopted only child. So I grew up with incredible parents. Like they've just been nothing but amazing my entire life and always supported me. But I grew up in, I guess you'd say, a religious household. I think I learned a lot of good values from church and those experiences. But as I got older, I started to want to be a rebel. And, you know, it wasn't cool to like not do things that I was told not to do. And so I don't even know how young I was, but I was like, my dad has beer. I wonder if that's any good. And so I like tried some and I was like, probably not for me. But I still had that like itch, I think early, that was like, this is taboo. I'm going to try it. I'm going to sneak a couple and I'm going to hide them in my room and try one night. And then as I got into like the end of middle school, early high school, I think I just surrounded myself with people that were older and were drinking and just heightened that like desire to do what I wasn't supposed to do. And from there, I think it really just spiraled.
Yeah, that age gap, that high school years, that difference in behavior between or like early high school and like the upperclassmen, underclassmen can be big, and that can definitely influence our decisions. Do you remember from those early years, like the first time or the first couple times, like drinking, just the effect that it had on you, like while consuming, and then also like on the backside of it, like the next day, were there either consequences or just maybe not getting caught or maybe getting caught, but also the feeling you had after having done it?
Yeah. So I think it was like, ooh, I did something I wasn't supposed to do. Like, go you, mom and dad. But I think early on, what I learned looking back was that alcohol was to get drunk. Like, that was the goal. And so I learned really early that, like, why would you drink and not get drunk? Who would do that? So that was like a big mentality that I had. And I had hangovers all the time. And they sucked. But I was like, why not do it again?
Yeah.
It's probably going to be different this time.
I relate to that. You know, there was moments where maybe things might have started socially, but it was like the same was true for me. I was firing for effect. Like, I knew what happened at a certain level of consumption, and I was ready to get there, like right away. I'm like, I know how this is gonna feel, and I want to go there right now.
Yeah, I think a big part of it too, being in that like younger person of my like friend group and people I was around, I definitely had a lot of like anxiety and just didn't feel like maybe I didn't fit in or anything. And so like when I started drinking, I was like, ooh, liquid courage. Like, now I can be myself, and now like I'll fit in, and I'm not like, you know, feeling like I'm being weird or like anything. I'm cool now.
Yeah. I think that's an important thing to recognize, that we often don't see at that age, is that we are using it like as a tool. I think we see it in the moment. We see it as, I'm just getting drunk because, you know, hey, whatever, I'm at a party and this is just what we do. But if in those moments we were able to pull back, a lot of times we can see it in retrospect, this is providing a service to me, and that's to make me comfortable in my skin. It's to make me comfortable in this element. We don't see the consequences of that, but it's a tool. We're using it like a tool. And there's, for many of us, there's an evolution in that tool usage, whatever, however that saying would go. Well, let's keep walking forward, like beyond high school. Yeah. Tell us about just the evolution of like what was happening with you internally, externally, and how that related to your alcohol use.
Yeah. So I started fairly young in my like early teenage years, and it just kept going. And I remember one moment where I probably should have realized that this wasn't a good path to go down. I was a senior in high school, and I always thought that I didn't really want to go to college, but it was sort of what was expected. And so I said, you know, all right, fine, I'll go to college. But I also wanted to go into the military. So my like agreement was, yeah, I'll go to college, but I'll go into the reserves. So I'll still do school, but I'll do the reserves. And then very quickly before graduation, I got my first DUI. So I was maybe a few months after 18, and that wasn't fun. And that kind of ruined that path of going into the military. So for a while, I, you know, really was like, man, I really just screwed everything up. And I think that kind of spiraled into, well, you know, I already screwed it up. Why not keep doing what I'm doing? And sadly, you know, I tried to do school, and school for me was just a big party. You know, I was away from home. I could do what I wanted. I, you know, went out with friends all the time, and drinking was very heavy in what we did in college. And I eventually failed out of that because I wasn't doing the schoolwork. I wasn't going to classes. And then, you know, some of the other moments were once I finally settled everything with that DUI, I got myself two more. Like, I just had to learn the very hard way.
That's tough, man. I'm curious, you know, I think I can safely say that after your first DUI, that that alcohol kind of provided some cover for you. I'm sure you were probably hurt about, you know, you were hurt by just like how things went down. Curious, like what kind of things were you believing about yourself after that? Like it changed your path. You know, you had this trajectory you were planning on going down. What sorts of things were you believing about yourself in that moment?
Yeah, so I think it was a lot of, I didn't have a direction. I didn't have any plan. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. You know, I think I got the third DUI probably before I was, 23 maybe. So it was still pretty young. And I still didn't have any idea what I wanted to do with my life. I sort of felt like I was stuck at that time. You know, I saw people my age were graduating college, were starting successful careers. You know, some people my age were starting families, getting married, all this other stuff. And I was just like, I don't know what I want. Like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what my path is. So I think a lot of my drinking surrounded around just this coping of like, I don't know what's next. So why not just do this and just get by?
Yeah, that's tough to play that comparison game too. When we see our peers, you know, hitting these milestones that, you know, that society kind of puts in place. And if we're not, you know, if we've deviated from that, it's easy to believe certain shit about ourselves, which I think is garbage. And if we're not equipped to handle that, you know, mentally or emotionally, booze is a great, you know, in those moments, it's a lot of times it's the only coping mechanism we have, and it works for a time being, right? Let's talk about like real life external consequences of, you know, some rapid fire DUIs is probably doesn't look great in the court system to be judicially involved. It has its own set of impacts. How did that look for you after the third one?
Yeah, so I settled everything with the first one. You know, in North Carolina, you lose your license for a year. You can apply, you know, to get a conditional license that allows you to go to like work, school, errands type of thing. And you have like a time that you have to be home and stuff. But I did that for a year and then went through and had to pay a bunch of money and had to pay to get my license back. And then it might have been a year after everything was said and done. I think it was 2015. So I got the first one in 2011. And then I think I got one the end of 2014 and then early 2015. The two were pretty close together. So court wasn't looking great for me, which sort of led to my next step of my journey. I had a lawyer at the time who said, hey, this isn't good. Like, you're probably going to face some jail time. We could take it to court and we can try and fight it. But, you know, there's some real consequences if you don't win these. I suggest checking into an inpatient rehab because, you know, maybe we can use that time towards potential jail time. You know, days served. And I think at the time I was like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. I'll go to rehab, whatever. Like, and looking back, I was like, he probably knew I had a problem. He was just, you know, trying to figure out a way to get me to get some realization.
Yeah. Motivated suggestion.
Yeah. So I went to rehab. I did like a 30-day inpatient, and I don't know what program I used, but I went through somewhere I found online and ended up going to a rehab in Texas. So it was away from home. And I think I learned there that I might have a problem with alcohol. It's crazy to think that you go to rehab thinking, oh, it's fine. I'm just doing this for, you know, to help my court case. And then you get there and I'm starting to talk to like the therapist there. And I realize maybe I do have a drinking problem. Like, I don't think this happens to most people. And I remember talking to someone who said, you know, I don't think you have a drinking problem. You just make poor choices when you drink. You know, I think you just need to not make poor choices. And I think that kind of sat in my head for a while, that I didn't know if I qualified as being an alcoholic or being someone who had problems with drinking.
Yeah, that's it's weird how sometimes how that revelation comes to us. And then like once we're in the room, it's like, oh, like we kind of ignore everything that got us into that space. But once we're there, it's like, oh, son of a bitch, it's me. They're talking about me.
Yeah, like what? You know, I looked at it and I think a lot of us have this idea in our minds, especially if we're younger, that, you know, I still have a job, you know, I still have some money in my bank, like I am not homeless, you know, I'm not an alcoholic. Like, and for me, like I wasn't drinking every single night. Like I wasn't coming home and saying, oh, I have to drink. I was, I guess what a lot of people would say is like a weekend warrior. When I drank, I blacked out because I never found that sweet spot. You know, we were talking about how, you know, drinking for me was because I want to be drunk. And so I would race to get there and I always overshot it.
Yeah. Not finding that sweet spot, always going extra. And then, yeah. So you're in there, you realize like, oh, okay, crap, this might be me. I relate to that as well. It was a similar sort of realization for me. I went to rehab with a different intention to, you know, maybe I can moderate or control, or this will teach me how to manage. What was it like? Was it a hard stick? Like as you were, like, as you moved out of treatment, was that like the moment?
You know, it was temporarily. I had committed to maybe I shouldn't drink and let's try this out. And after I left the inpatient, I did some IOP, which is intensive outpatient, but I was still living in like a sober house. So we would go during the day and then, you know, we were in a sober house, so you couldn't drink or anything there. And then I actually transitioned to a different one in California. And for me at the time, I was like, oh yeah, California. I've always wanted to go there. Why not? We'll start over there. New place, new chances, new opportunities, new me. And, you know, it worked for a little while until it didn't. And then I just had to keep trying it a couple more times. And, you know, maybe they were right. Maybe I don't have a drinking problem. And, you know, my drinking started to pick up again. And, you know, I'd have a drink here and there. And then quickly when those drinks happened, I blacked out again. And it was just starting that cycle again. I ended up moving back to North Carolina. I don't know if y'all know, but California is very expensive. And when you're working in the service industry, you know, you're probably working two or three jobs just to, you know, pay your rent. So I came back home and had to finish out with my court situation. And I ended up on probation. And during that time, you know, I wasn't drinking while I was on probation. You know, they'd do drug tests and can randomly show up and say, you know, are you drunk? And so I followed the rules then. And once that was done, I was just like, all right, I'm free. Now I can do what I want. Yeah. Some of those things started picking back up.
You know what comes to mind as you talk about this, Emily, is just like the power of this stigma that we have of like, maybe I need, you know, maybe I have an issue. Maybe I need to like slow some stuff down. But because, you know, we joke about it in the recovery world, but it's also so incredibly true. Like I'm not, you know, for whatever reason, it always involves like sleeping under bridges and drinking out of brown bags. But because I'm not these things, I can't possibly, like it couldn't be me. I'm not that. I couldn't be this thing. And that, I don't know, like that is one of my goals with my involvement with this podcast or in the recovery space, is just to like lower that barrier for entry. Like, hey, if this relationship with this thing is causing you problems, like change it. Like you have permission to change it, but we, society, like whatever it is, just tells us, it just keeps us in it for way longer than we need to be, because it's not that worst case scenario. Then I don't need to make these changes.
Right. And I think drinking is just so normalized in our society. One of the things that makes it difficult is that, you know, when you're doing drugs, it's easy to go downhill quickly. When people see you drinking, it's legal to drink. So it's a lot higher of a bar for people to say, oh, you know, they have a problem, or you should slow down, because it's just a normal thing that people do in their everyday life that don't have drinking problems.
Yeah. Yeah. And freaking booze will kill you by the inch, I think. It can go very rapidly too, but just with the social acceptance, it can take a lot longer to get to that point. That's tough. It's so incredibly frustrating, but you know, we're trying to change it. We're doing our little bits and pieces to try to change it and open doors for people. All right. So you finished. Back to your story. Enough of my weird tangent. You finished with your court obligations. You're free from that.
Yeah, I went back to, I wouldn't say that I was drinking as often as I had previously. I came back and I didn't have a job. So I started working overnights at Walmart, which is something, you know, in my mind, I thought I'd never do. And there's no problem with working at Walmart to anyone out there who works at Walmart. That was something I never thought I was going to do. At the time, I was like, wow, look at me. I'm working at Walmart, you know. And I sort of fell into the career that I'm in now. And during that time, I was trying to do things to get my life together. And one of those things was taking my health journey back. I had somewhat been active, but I'd never really committed to it. So I started committing to like my better nutrition and exercise routine. And one of those things that involved was I started counting, you know, macronutrients for what I was eating. So I would count, you know, fats, carbs, proteins in the day. And I learned that alcohol apparently is like 7 calories. And I was like, man, this is such a pain. Like, how am I going to work out my numbers and then, you know, start drinking? And I don't remember how much I drank. So now I've screwed all my numbers up. And it sort of slowly tricked me into drinking less because I didn't want to do the math.
Oh, I love that. It's too, like, of all the things, it's, man, booze is just too big of a pain in the ass. It's too tough to number.
Yes.
When you have this realization that, all right, this is going to be a problem for me. Was it like a light switch, or was it a slow, all right, I'm going to just kind of taper off this and get rid of it?
Yeah. So it was a slow taper. It was like, okay, I'm going to be very strict about it today, but then like on that free day, if I have some drinks, it's okay. And then like, it just slowly, slowly worked down to drinking less. And then I remember going out with, I think it might have been my parents for the weekend of St. Patrick's Day. And, you know, we had a couple drinks. I didn't get drunk while I was with them. But then I went home and I was like, I'm not ready to stop. And so I had some drinks, more drinks by myself. And I woke up the next morning and I had a horrible hangover. And I woke up and I was like, this sucks. I am so tired of this. Like, I don't want to wake up with a hangover. Like, I don't want to go to the gym with this hangover. So it kind of became I don't want to feel like crap if I want to go to the gym, or I don't want to feel like crap every time I wake up. I'm tired of feeling like crap.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like really just a recognition of like, here's some things that are important to me, and this is what I care about. This is what I want to invest my time and energy into. And just through a crappy hangover, just that epiphany of like, this does not compete. Like, this is not, it's not providing anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times people have these big rock bottom moments where they're like, I don't know. Some people have very, I guess what I would say, rock bottom dramatic moments in life. And then they're like waking up and they're like, I can't do this anymore. And I think it was a culmination of having several of what should have been rock bottom moments, and it finally catching up and me just saying, I can't do this, and feeling like I needed to try and get my life on track, and something had to change. And that was something I wanted to try and change.
Yeah. I love it. I don't know if it's, maybe it's because I'm desperately like begging for spring to arrive in this state. But I'm loving this like seed analogy lately, like all these experiences that you had, you know, again, for some people, like maybe that first Dewey, nope, that's it. You know, and some people want to stack them up. That's all right. You know, whatever. We gotta learn at our own pace, right? But I believe each of those moments, like it's planting seeds, and it's, you know, if taking nutrition seriously is the catalyst that it takes to like, hey, all these previous things, like all that previous knowledge that you took in, it wasn't, you know, maybe it didn't stick to get 100% traction, but that's, it all built towards something, right? I've got to believe that, like, when you made that decision, that some of that information kind of like came back. I guess that's a pretty broad assumption on my part, so we'll turn that into a question rather than a statement. Did some of that stuff find its way, you know, back into your, like, hey, all right, I picked this up, to maybe I can apply this now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I sort of kept track of some of the people that I met during my time in rehab, and there was a particular person that I really connected with while I was there. She was a girl from Philadelphia, and we bonded over like loving football. So we would go in and watch, you know, the times when we would get TV time, we'd watch football and we'd just cheer on our teams. And during the time that I was starting to quit drinking, I think one of the biggest things that happened was I was like, man, I wonder what she's doing. I wonder how she's doing. I hope she's okay. And I happened to look on Facebook and saw that she had passed away. And that was such a big moment of like realization that like anything could happen. Like nobody's promised tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big catalyst of like, I don't want to be another person that people say, oh, I wonder how they're doing, and find out that I'm not here anymore. So I think that was a big influence in continuing to stack some days. Because in my mind, I was like, I don't want to disappoint this person, even though like we had drifted apart and we weren't, I wouldn't say extremely close, but it was just something in my brain that was like, I want to do better because I cared about this person even for a little bit. And that motivated me.
Yeah. There's a saying that I've heard in AA, and if I don't butcher it, but it's, you know, like not all of us make it, unfortunately. But it's our responsibility, those of us that are around, to use that as fuel and motivation, and to try to learn something from somebody else's struggle, and let it not be in vain, because it can carry a little bit of like inspiration or motivation or something to try to move us, and however we need to do to wrap our heads around that, to be like, all right, like, can I get another day? Can I stack one more? Like, what else can I get? Even if it's just a lesson for a way that we don't want to end up, there's something in it. Let's talk through some of those early days, you know, up through like that first year. What sort of things worked? What sort of things didn't work?
So I think very shortly after I had seen the news about this person passing, it might have even been the same night. I think I was Googling, and I was like, problems with alcohol, podcast for alcoholism. And I stumbled upon Recovery Elevator, and I happened to listen to a couple of podcasts, and anybody who's involved in like the groups, community and stuff knows Craig.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first ones I heard, as well as a good guy from Canada named Nick. And I think his story was one of the biggest ones that related to me. That was the first one that I felt like I really connected with. And I was like, man, you know what? This is probably, you know, I might have some difficulties with alcohol. And, you know, all these people have such different stories of how they got to where they are. And maybe I can do this.
That's the beauty of what these podcasts and I mean, obviously in particular to Recovery Elevator, but we're lucky to live in a time where there's a lot more, lots of options out there. But that's the beauty of this, is hearing a version of ourselves through these other people's stories. And yeah, Craig's a giant pain in the butt. But I love that. I love that dude. And I talk to him weekly, and same, like, I know exactly who you're talking about. This is like throwback. I mean, these guys are still around, but, and I talk to both of them. I talk to both those guys every week, and they're like wonderful people. And how cool to be able to find a version of yourself through Nick's story. Did you, we've mentioned it. It's not a secret. We know that you found your way to Cafe RE and you found some community there. How did having community play into your early recovery, and did you try anything like beyond Cafe RE in the podcast?
Yeah, so I joined the Cafe RE community. I think it was maybe after a couple months that I hadn't been drinking. And I think it was right after that 6 months that there was maybe that first Atlanta meetup.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so scared. I was like, I don't know any of these people. What if they hate me? All of these like anxious feelings and like just not knowing what to expect. And I went to that meetup, and it may have been that one or another one, I'm not sure, but I remember being nervous. And then I got there and it just felt like I'd known these people my whole life. I had an amazing time. And I think that was around the same time that I found like the sober people for the music festivals. So I was starting to learn that there was a community of people out here who didn't have to drink. And knowing that I wasn't alone was such a big part of that. I joined a lot of the chats. I got really involved in that early on. And that was a big help because, you know, some days I was like, man, maybe I don't have this problem. No, whatever. And so when those thoughts crept in, I jumped on those chats. I looked on the groups and I was like, what are these people doing? Let me get some juice to keep going. Like, let me jump some inspiration, maybe listen to the podcast, all this other stuff. And I knew that there were people that I'd met in person now that if I needed to, I could call them. And that was really helpful.
We beat it to death, but there's a reason we beat it to death, is that just the community, the impact that community, and just you said it, Emily, like knowing that we're not alone. We get like, it's absolutely terrifying, but also it's fairly universal experience that like you just kind of feel okay. Like, I don't know, like we're all in this together. And let's say most people kind of find themselves feeling pretty comfortable after not too long a time. And then just knowing that if you got to pick up the phone, that there's, I mean, I probably have hundreds of people on my phone right now that I could call that would just be, hey, what do you need? And there's not a lot of explanation. Like it doesn't require a big story. I could just say, hey, having a tough time. I just need to talk to someone. Okay, what do you got? We're here for each other because we know what's at stake, and we know what it's like. And we just kind of, you and I have very different stories, but also like as you're talking, like I'm like, yep, I get it. We've got a little bit of time before we jump into rapid fire, and I just want to look forward a little bit. You just celebrated 5 years, which again is absolutely freaking amazing. Looking forward, what are you excited about in your life? Whether it's recovery stuff or just things that are available to you now, because you have your life. Your life is your own. It doesn't belong to something that's inside of a bottle. What are you fired up about, Emily?
So many things. I mean, one, I'm excited every day, because for a very long time in my early years, I didn't see what a future looked like. I mean, I never had like suicidal ideations, but I never really, it was just whatever happens, you know, if I don't make it to 30, I don't make it to 35, I don't ever make it to 50, whatever it happened. Yeah. But I'm excited to get older. Like, I'm excited because while, you know, some days I feel like I'm old now at 31, I know that I have such a long life to live. And it's so exciting to just look forward to not knowing what's in the future and being okay with that and having so many opportunities ahead of me. I mean, I never saw myself in the field of work that I'm in. And I've become a better friend, a better daughter, a better person to work with, I think. I mean, I'm responsible now. I'm reliable, I think, at least. And I have incredible, like, people that I work with that also provide, like, feedback of, like, positives. And none of my experiences that I've had really have had that. And I think it's such a big, it's attributed to that now I want to do well in anything that I do. And I have a goal of, like, just doing the best I can in whatever. And it feels good.
I love it. There's something special about embracing some just like basic pleasures in life, like just to be able to show up and be walking in the skin and feeling comfortable in the skin that we're in and feeling like a good person. Like we're not constantly fighting internally. Like the peace that provides is such a gift and such a blessing. And it warms my heart to be sitting here looking at you and just, I don't know, like I can feel that from you. And I love that you have that because you deserve it. You absolutely deserve it. And I'm super proud of you for the work that you've done that's gotten you to this place. You're killing it, sister. You are.
Thanks. I mean, I won't say that every single day is sunshine and rainbows. There's definitely difficult days. And majority of those days are not days that I look at and say, alcohol is going to solve this. I'm learning how to be comfortable in, like, not being completely comfortable, you know, and knowing that there are things in life that I can't control, and just doing the best that I can, and knowing that whatever's supposed to happen is going to happen. And that's comforting. And as far as, like, days go, I mean, I've gotten this far, and in my head, now it's a game, and I just want to keep beating the high score. I don't want to ruin my streak.
I love it. I remember that from your email as I was rereading it this morning. I love that. Emily, sister, with that, we are at the rapid fire round. I'm going to ask you some questions. I'll give you 30 to 60 seconds to answer. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Number one, what was your biggest fear as you were thinking about quitting drinking?
What are people going to think about me?
Yeah, pretty common. Kind of the backside of that. What is a positive that you didn't expect in a life without alcohol?
That life, that I get to look forward to life now. Yeah. That makes sense.
It does, absolutely. What is your go-to alcohol-free drink?
Oh, man. I'm pretty boring, but I drink a lot of water. I use, like, the little, like, Neos or whatever those things are sometimes, and, like, give a little flavor, but I drink a lot of water.
We got some Bobby Boucher vibes going here, and that's all right. Please tell me you get the reference. Bobby Boucher, Waterboy.
I've never seen that.
Oh, my good night. All right, well, we got to figure out how to remedy that. I will be following up for sure. It's okay. What's your favorite resource in recovery? This could be a book, a community, an app, a podcast, and, like, anything that you've used.
People.
I love that answer. I think that's awesome. People.
Real connections.
That's a game changer. What parting piece of guidance can you give to our listeners who are either thinking about sobriety or early in their recovery?
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. Don't beat yourself up. It's hard. Be proud of the days that you don't give up, and celebrate even the small wins, whether it's an hour you took tonight off, you limited your drinks tonight, whatever it is, you know, be proud of the fact that you're questioning drinking, or even you're listening to this podcast. You know, don't give up.
Love that. Emily, last but certainly not least, can you give listeners your favorite "you might need to ditch the booze if" line?
Oh, I mean, it relates to my story, but you might need to ditch the booze if you learn you have a problem with drinking because your lawyer tells you you should go to rehab.
you're paying that guy to talk to you, you might want to listen to him. It could be a clue. Emily, thank you for your time. Again, happy, 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 happy 5 years. Sister, I love you and I'm proud of you. You're killing it. Keep it up.
Thanks. It feels good. I mean, like I said before, I never would have imagined I'd be here, and I'm just excited to keep it going.
All right, sister. We'll talk to you soon. Recovery Elevator, thanks for listening. And thank you, Emily, for coming on the show. You're going to help a lot of people today. It's been busy up here in North Dakota lately, Ari. We've had a lot going on at my regular job. Our kids have been busy with spring activities. And as I start to look towards summer, it seems like it might already be planned away with all the things that we need to do. Thinking about this the other day, I had a moment of anxiety, wondering if things will ever slow down. My mind got away from me for a bit. This is why it's important for me to stay connected with my recovery. It's been a long time since I thought about reaching for a drink, but some of those feelings and emotions still show up. Left unchecked, that anxiety turns into me overly stressing, trying to control, and not so great to be around. I've mentioned this before, but part of my routine is a weekly meeting with my sponsor. He's someone who knows my story, he's heard all the yuck and muck from my past, and he can recognize these feelings in me. We had a good talk last week, and I was reminded that there will always be something else to worry about. But peace is available to me if I want to work for it. And there's only one place that I can find it, in the present moment. This is my current focus, to make time each day to get into the present moment and enjoy where I'm at, to really be with my family, with my friends, and the people I love, to take a breath and enjoy the life I've been gifted. The prepping and planning will always be there, but if I don't pause, the present will slip away. We're the only ones that can do this, RE, but we don't have to do it alone. I love you guys.